But Mr. Lipson, I'd like to propose, as chair of SPNR, I propose that Councillor Hanlon take the chair to cover the proceedings of this afternoon's council meeting. Thank you.
Okay, and that's been seconded.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. That's fine.
So, Una, you can go ahead.
Sorry, I thought somebody's around the speaker. Thanks very much, everybody, for coming on today, and a special welcome to the South Eastern Trust to begin with, and then I think the Southern Trust are going to come on when you are finished. So you are very, very welcome. There's apologies received today from Councillor Savage Walker, and Councillor Mason sends particular apologies. She wasn't able to chair today, so as discussed there, Councillor Andrews has proposed that I chair the meeting as chair of SPNR. Are there any declarations of interest? Okay, and if we could just, I think the best way to work it today is to get the presentation from the Trust and then any questions. And if you could just indicate in the chat, if you do want to come in with questions, then we'll take them in the order that they're coming in. Okay, so if we could just hand over to the Trust then. Is it yourself, Roisin?
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. Can we just check, can you all hear and see us okay?
Yes, we're seeing it loud and clear.
Okay, thank you. It's just in the health service we don't have Teams, so we're trying to linked it up to a laptop and then onto a big screen. So apologies if I can't see you all. So I'll just be relying on you, Councillor Hanlon, to feed through to us. Okay. Thank you all for touching base with the Trust, and I know that we've set aside an hour. I think it would probably work better for the council that if we have a session separately for South Eastern and then a separate session for you from the Southern Trust. And although it's important for me to say that the two trusts, in fact all the six trusts in Northern Ireland, we do work very closely together. And you know, Shane and I have just come off another meeting, but it just means that you can focus on services specific to each of the areas within each trust. I think this might be the first meeting since I have taken up the post as Chief Executive. So again, just wanting to say to you all, thank you for all the messages of support and encouragement that you've sent in. And so far, I'm enjoying the role, and I'm delighted. As you know, I'm from Crossgar, and I'm delighted to have the post as Chief Executive of the Trust. I've worked in a clinical background, most of you will know that already, and I've worked as a director in the Trust for 10 years. So I'm absolutely committed to this post and in this Trust. Worked here for a long time and intend to stay here for the rest of my career. So I'm joined today by David Robinson, who's our Director of Hospital Services, and also by Damien Brannigan, who's our Assistant Director of Mental Health Services, because I'm not sure, Councillor Hanlon, you can reflect how we're going for time, but we were sent in a range of questions which have been responded to, but also a special focus on mental health. So maybe see how you're going, and if we get that covered, or if not, do you want a separate meeting another day, we can do that as well. But you know, even if we sort of say we'll try and set aside maybe 15 minutes dedicated to allow Damien to give you an update on mental health. I know that mental health is an absolute priority for us all across the Trust and across the Council, and there's a lot been happening. So I'll try and keep focus maybe for about 20 minutes, because then I know to try and allow time for questions. Really just to try and share with you, I'll give you an overview of where we are. Suffice to say, and I'm sure you know from the media, that we still are very much in the middle of the pressures caused by the pandemic. And any suggestion that COVID is tailing off, sadly that's not the case. So we're continuing to see high numbers of cases in the community, high numbers of people being admitted to hospital. That has not really reduced over the last month. So across our trust today, we would have how many, David?
70.
And we've had 70 COVID-positive inpatients now for the last 4 weeks. So before, remember, we would have seen like big peaks and then dropping off. But we're not seeing that. and the same in our critical care unit at the Ulster Hospital. Today we've got
12 patients.
We've got 12 patients, and over for the last month that hasn't dropped either. So that's the position right across Northern Ireland. It is really important for me to share with you that this is going to be a very difficult winter, the most difficult I think that we will have ever seen in all our careers. And I just want to be very open and honest with you in relation to that. It is, that's because of the COVID pandemic and also the winter period as well. So what I want to say with you is that we have been working very closely as a system with the Department of Health and the board, just really to try and do everything that we possibly can, that we're as resilient as possible to manage through this winter. On the Trust website, you'll have seen that the Minister's published the service delivery plans, which is showing, you know, everything that we can do that we are going to be doing to try and help our staff manage the pressures through the winter period. So that's available for you to share. You know, there's no point in me not being honest and saying, are we going to manage? Possibly not. And I want to be right to say to you that, you know, the Trust has got some fantastic staff and they appreciate all of the support that you're giving them. But are things going to be extremely challenging and possibly collapse? Yes. You know, that is how stark the messages are to the Minister for Health about this. So, you know, in the context of that, we know this, but really all we can do is do the best we possibly can. I suppose I'm sharing that so that whenever you're be contacted by people, that you can give them the context of what we're in. There is the potential for services to even have to close if there are very, very extreme pressures. And that's really, it's really about balancing risk. Where we are in relation to all of our services is that we are confident the vast majority of our services are up and running. So that's very important for you to know. There are no services that are totally closed at all. So right across the piece, services are operating. And one of the things I wanted to share, I suppose, with you today is that I'm really keen that we will have and build on, actually, you know, a genuine partnership going forward, because the more open and honest we can be with you and you with us, then we're representing the needs of our public and our community the best we possibly can. Are there challenges? Yes. And, you know, what I would say is that, you know, with an absolute genuine desire to work in partnership, you know, the Trust would be very open to working with the council, voluntary community sector, and our patient service users to look at maybe establishing some kind of partnership forum or pathfinder that you might find useful, specifically for the Down area. I'm keen to look at that. You know, this is a time, I think, for the Trust and the Council to really look upwards and look across. We would want to try and support the Council to be honest, to raise your game and to raise your focus and to be able to be appraised of services right across health and social care in the Down area. So, for example, you know, often over the years, we only get questions. It almost appears that the Council's only interested in services in the Down Hospital. But I know that's not the case. You know, we have over 30 facilities and centres where we're providing services across the Down area. But normally the questions only come about what's happening from one unit. So I would like to really help look at, you know, a way of us communicating about all the services we're providing across the Trust: mental health services, children's services, adult services, and our hospital services as well, but not just only. And I think that would be really important, because one of the things it's so important for us to look at is, where are we going in health and social care over the next 5 years, and what is the model going to look like? And that is really about sharing the challenges that we have, but also the choices, and for us all to be able to have grown-up conversations with the public. And that is a space that I think we all, and probably I'm sure you all, want to be in as well. You know, yes, we can be optimistic, but it needs to be balanced with realism. And we, we as the health services providing the service, you know, need to be very realistic with, you know, what are the challenges, but what's actually possible in that space. I would be really keen not only always to dwell on, you know, the negative. I'm not going to defend services or always to be on the back foot. I really believe in the services that the South Eastern Trust are providing are very good. I believe that staff are doing their absolute best, and we're doing everything we can, really, I think, to continue to support them. But one of the big areas I would like us to get into is about addressing health inequalities and really focusing on services in our trust council areas where there are areas of social deprivation and where we know that people are not getting the best possible outcomes that they can. And that would be something that I would really welcome us doing. You know, I know about challenges in those areas, particularly in terms of life expectancy, higher numbers of people, you know, getting diabetes or high blood pressure or dementia. And there's a lot of work, I think, that we can continue to do and to strengthen that. And we know that in one of the 20% most deprived areas of the trust, one of those is the Flying Horse in Downpatrick, and that is something that again might warrant us really strengthening our focus on, and it is something that we've been doing with the Public Health Agency and with our teams. And I suppose that's really where I wanted to start. I really would genuinely like us to look at all our services and to really lift this up into the conversations that we need to be focusing on, you know, because unless we're going to folks get upstream and really look at what we can do to prevent people becoming ill. So, you know, our hope is to have a health service, a service that's focused on health and keeping people well. And at the minute in Northern Ireland, all the resources, you know, not all the resources, but the vast majority of resources go on servicing and resourcing an illness service, is on looking after those people that are ill. So if we can really look at how can we work through, whether it's community planning or your different working groups, and having a partnership forum to really say, well, look, you know, what are these key priorities and what is it that we need to do to maintain our services and to strengthen them? What I would say to you is 85% of services that are provided by the trust in the Down area are provided outside the Down hospital. And again, I'm just sharing that with you because of, you know, again, where should we be placing our focus? So, you know, that's important, I mean, as well. Now, the services in the Down Hospital are absolutely critical, and I'm now going to move on to, you know, share with you where we are in relation to those, and then maybe the focus is going to be on mental health conversation today. Hopefully, Councillor Hanlon, I did send out a response at the end of last week just to some of the specific questions and ask the Council to send that out. Can I just check that everybody got those? Yes. Is that yes?
Yeah, it was uploaded on at a certain time.
Oh, super. Okay, folks. So at least you've got that. And again, I'm happy to pick up rather than me run through then all the detail of the responses to the questions. We'll just give you a bit of a general overview, and then again, happy to pick them up separately as well. In relation to the Down Hospital, David can talk about some detail, but what I wanted to share with you with all the services provided from the Down, apart from the urgent care services, have now been restored. So everything's up and running apart from that. So the 89 inpatient beds that are in the Down Hospital are fully open, they're full, and all our outpatient services are running. So that will continue on. We will hope to try, because we need our beds in the Down Hospital, and we will continue to support those. In relation to the, you know, we've been doing good work with our day surgery theatres, and again, that's been back up and running for quite a while now. We're providing 10 operating sessions per week, and all our commissioned operating sessions are operational. We do have more capacity, and we're keen to work with the Health and Social Care Board, you know, to commission more capacity, and we're confident that we could deliver. In relation to the urgent care centre, what I would say is that we are expecting through the Department of Health, you might have heard about it, There's been a review of urgent and emergency care services across Northern Ireland, and this is going to, I haven't seen it yet myself, so apparently this is going to be published in the very near future. So as soon as that's published, we'll be able to look at that, and then we'll be able to reflect how do our services fit within the model or the framework set out for the future of urgent and emergency care services. And then again, whenever that comes out, I'd be more than happy to have a specific meeting, and again, something that might feed into a partnership forum to say, well, look, what do we want and what's possible to provide in terms of urgent and emergency services from the Down and across the Down area. We continue to provide our consultant-led urgent care centre, and that is Monday to Friday from 8 to 6. We've also got the nurse-led minor injuries unit on the Saturday and Sunday, and then we've got GP out of hours. That will continue, so it will, for lots of reasons. But we feel that it is a safe service, and it is clinically appropriate to provide that service at this moment in time, and we'll continue to keep it under review. One of the things, again, is we want to provide as many services as possible close to home that are appropriate and safe. And, you know, again, your support in promoting that, we can do more communications out, but the level of usage of the Down Urgent Care Service is high. So there are, over the last 3 months, there have been 1,800 people contact and use that service within those hours over the last 3 months. So that would equate to an annual usage of 22,000, which is the same number of people that were using it before we had to make the changes. So our medical and our nursing teams are working really hard. And I'm not saying, it won't continue to evolve. Of course it will continue to evolve. There's lots of things I think that David can talk about that the teams are looking at to do more and to continue to improve that service. But certainly it's very important to talk about safety here. And the clinical team and our emergency medical team are saying this is providing a safe service. And, you know, the weekly transfers to other sites by ambulance have been reduced by over 80%. So that's really, really important because, we don't want to have people who are maybe coming to the Down very, very acutely unwell that need a more level one acute emergency department and then haven't been transferred out by ambulance, because that's delaying. That's delaying their access to the most appropriate place. But there's good work going on, and I think it's important to say as well that we've got good relationships. We've always had good relationships in Down with our GP colleagues, our GP out of hours, and our nursing teams. So there's a lot going on now for us to really maximise our admissions into the Down. There's lots of ways that we're doing that, but all the beds are full and they're absolutely needed. I did see an article in the Down Recorder last week, actually. I couldn't fail to miss it because it was the entire front page. But we're confident. If I was asked for a response, we're absolutely confident the Down is playing a critical role in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, but also in terms of managing access to urgent and emergency care. It always has and it always will. That service is absolutely vital. There are no empty beds in the Down Hospital, and it plays a really key role. Are we planning on an extension to the Down Hospital? Not to my knowledge, and I certainly haven't ever been asked to consider an extension to the hospital. I think where that might have come is, as you know, we've been keen to install and be commissioned to provide an MRI service, and we've got proposals in with the Health and Social Care Board to do that, and we can do that if the Health and Social Care Board and the department support it. Now, that to house that scanner, there are a couple of options if and when we get the support for it. So we can see whether it's possible to put it within the existing building. But MRI has got very technological requirements, so that may need a small extension. And if that's the case, we're absolutely all on for that. There's no problem for that. We do not plan or feel that there's a need to provide more inpatient beds in the Down Hospital. The Down Hospital, as I say, has 89 inpatient beds, similar level to Lagan Valley Hospital, and we're confident that they're delivering what is needed. Support from the council would be welcome as always in terms of, for the MRI. There's nothing more that the Trust can do, only keep making sure it's in our capital plan priority, and we have got everything sitting ready to go should it happen. I would be confident that, you know, it's a service that we could start and would benefit from, and we would be very, very keen. We're keeping it on absolutely up on the agenda in terms of the Derwent Hospital. We've recently completed some works in the ground floor there to provide more outpatient capacity. That's the suite to the right of the coffee cart in the main atrium, and that is that just repurposed one of our education suites. So we've moved that to provide more clinical space within the hospital. So I think, I suppose in summary, those are the services that are happening within the Down. The urgent care model, I think, will be looked at. I don't know if you've heard of a sort of an initiative called No More Silos. And No More Silos is looking at greater partnership between emergency care and GP and primary care. And we're part of that. And we're doing all we possibly can to secure, you know, any investment that's possible through that. So we've got good teams with our clinical teams in the hospital with our GPs. And we've been able to realise some of that investment. And some of the other things we've been doing, as you know, we've got the multidisciplinary teams in primary care. You know, this service would be the envy of the region. So, you know, I'm just trying to make sure to share with you all the big picture. There's an awful lot that's really, really good in Down area, and I want to change the narrative and to say we need to look at it all. We must look at it all, and that's what we're all responsible. Other trusts would come on, and they would love to have the multidisciplinary teams in primary care. Again, we're going to keep strengthening those to make sure that within every single surgery or health centre across the Down area, access to services very close to home. And that, you know, as I say, the vast majority of services are provided outside a hospital. So it's really about the balance. I suppose you'd say, you know, we are optimistic, but we're balanced with realism as well. We know what's possible, but we also know what's not possible. You know, so again, more than happy to share that with you. I'm keen on a wider partnership as well. You know, and again, councillors, you would have experience and suggestions of maybe of how we could set something up in terms of having engagement and maybe involving younger people, involving the public, involving the voluntary community sector. I'm really keen to do that because we have a responsibility to have those open and honest conversations. And that's really the space we're in. We feel, we feel the model that we've got going in the Down area is working very well in that, you know, we have a hospital network. So we have the Ulster, the Down, the Lagan Valley and Newton Arch really working very well. But we also have all of our community services and Damien's on here today. You know, so those services have taken a lot of services, for example, out. It's really how the service is going, the health service is going, you know, nationally. People want to be able to stay in their own communities where possible. They want to have care received within their own home. And that's why Damien will be able to share with you now some of the massive interventions that we've been doing within mental health services. But it's the same with children's services as well. You know, where we have fewer, but we still have children who need to go into children's homes, residential homes. But those models are developing. And, you know, it's better really to try and have children with greater fostering and greater family support. That, I think, is key. The final point before I hand over to Damien would be just to remind you all, the vaccination programme, again, thank you so much. You know, the council, you have been fantastic with us, supporting and encouraging. We have been, I've been on record, we've gone for it really, really well, this vaccination programme. We know that is the best thing we can do, and it's the only way out of it. And, you know, I will say to you, my teams have put their heart and soul into the vaccination programme for the Down area. Do I feel that we have done everything we possibly can for the vaccine programme? Yes. Have I personally led the programme at the SSE arena because I know it's the right thing to do? Yes. And have the Down, Newry Morne Down Council come behind us with the work that we've done at the South Eastern College? And also with tackling particular areas like Ballymote, Flying Horse. We've had great results there, you know, just by popping up the mobile bus and even in one session having 300 people. So, you know, if you have been encouraging people to come forward for the vaccine, it's definitely working in the Down area. And it's something that, again, we're responsive to see if there are areas that you feel have been missed. We're more than happy to look at it. We're supporting the flu vaccine program. We're supporting the COVID booster. We're supporting the schools. So that's what we're doing at the moment. The last thing I would always finish with is probably about, you know, supporting our staff. Our staff, genuinely, staff are tired, I think it's fair to say. They're exhausted. We know that. We're doing what we can to support staff, really to try and say, look, guys, you know, we're going to be in for a really tough winter. You know, we've done a lot. And we're continuing to do the best we possibly can. So, you know, your support in that would be very much welcomed. So I'm just very aware of time. I don't want to take up any more. So if I hand over just to Damien for 5 minutes and then have the rest of the time for questions, Councillor Hanlon, would that be useful? You're on mute there, sorry.
Very, very keen to hear from Damien, obviously. I seem to be feedback on that. One of the things you mentioned there was possible closure of services. Because maybe during the COVID crisis. So given that the line is already filled, I don't know, is it making my head or?
No, we can't hear you okay. We can't hear you all right.
Can you? Okay. Catherine's in a second. It's okay now, actually. You know, like, how would you pick and choose which services you would have to close? That would be a bit of a worry, I think. And then also in relation to the booster jab, I've actually got a few questions in this morning from constituents asking, you know, what sort of time frame that'll be on. You might not be in a position to answer that. I'm sorry for putting you on the spot with it, but it's just pertinent today. I'll let Councillor Trainor come in and then you could maybe answer it all together. So do you want to go ahead, John?
Thanks very much, Anna, and I hope you can hear me okay, can you?
Yes, John.
Roisin, as always, great to have you at Council. And you're 100% right, the services that are delivered in the locality are next to none, and you're 100% right that there's a lot of services that are delivered in the community. And as you know yourself, we've availed as a family, we've availed of many of those services, and they're always to be commended. I suppose, picking up on that point, I'll start in the community services as opposed to going straight in for the hospital services. From the community occupational therapy side of it, I know from dealing with constituents that there is quite a wait in referrals being seen to. Would there be a problem at the minute with staffing levels and caseloads? And is there any plan to try and address that in a short term, medium term, and long term? And then the second question is maybe more along the hospital side and the idea of the urgent care centre. Obviously, over the last sort of 12 to 18 months, we've seen that the Ulster Hospital has been under severe pressure. I know that there's been over 47 times in the last 18 months where there has been a call to say that it's under severe pressure and to use appropriate clinical pathways. And the question maybe is there any capacity for extending the hours of service for the urgent care centre or for the nurse-led minor injuries unit that could relieve some of the pressures that would be seen at the likes of the Ulster A&E, freeing up space, obviously, in what must already be a packed waiting area and freeing up possible bed space and corridor space? That would be the two questions I have today, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. No, those are fine. And Councillor Hanlon, no, you're right to pick that up. When I say closure, I don't mean the closure of services in the Down Hospital. I mean closure of services across Northern Ireland. So hopefully that's reassuring for you. No, what I mean is that, you know, you've seen all the pressures in the news and Minister Swan saying, you know, that the health service could be on the verge of collapse. So really what that means is, you know, so the point that John's making, you know, sometimes there are so many people coming to an emergency department in all of them across Northern Ireland. And at one point in time, if it gets beyond a certain number, it'll just tip over. And, you know, the ambulance service, for example, are saying, you know, their waiting times for ambulances, it's just because of the demand. So, you know, if you have 10 ambulances outside Antrim emergency department and they can't get offloaded, then that's what I mean. There's a potential that emergency department might have to close for a number of hours. That's all I mean. So don't worry. I don't mean that services in our area will close. I just think the conversations are that there's such pressure on the emergency departments across Northern Ireland with this COVID-19 pandemic that the whole country is finding very difficult. That's all I mean. So hopefully that's helpful. I'll certainly send you out information about the booster programme. The GPs and pharmacies, you see, are doing most of it in the community. One of the things that we are doing, if you're getting queries from constituents, we are doing all our care home residents and staff with the COVID booster, and they've all been done. It's fantastic. We're the first trust we've finished and everything, because we know this is the best thing we can do to protect our older people in our home setting. And we're also to do the staff working in health and social care provide direct frontline services. So the rest of it is really provided through the GPs and pharmacies. Now, I'm happy enough, as information comes through, I'm happy I share with you what I have, because I know you get a lot of queries. I haven't heard of any dates yet, and I believe that the GPs are going to ask the pharmacies, for example, to do people over 50, and then the people will be able to book on to pharmacies. So it's supposed to be coming quite soon, within the next few weeks. And they will be using two different vaccines, both Pfizer and Moderna, for the booster. John, I wasn't actually aware at all of anything in relation to community occupational therapy. So, as you know, I'll take that away and I'll check specifically and I'll come back to you. And I'm going to ask David now, because you'll probably be fed up listening to me. he's smiling here today.
No comment.
To talk a little bit about the urgent care points that you mentioned.
Okay. Thanks, Rossi. Hello,
sorry to take your word, David. I'll be awake all night thinking of this if I don't ask you. If you've had AstraZeneca, can you have a booster of Pfizer or Moderna?
Yes, absolutely. And there's I'm going to tell you something even better. There's some research out there to say that where you've had one vaccine and then your booster is of a different drug, that actually your level of immunity could be even higher.
Okay.
So, no, don't worry. That's absolutely fine to have any vaccine.
Sorry, David, go ahead. Apologies.
Thank you. Good to see you again, and good to see you, John. But for others who I might not have met before, my name's David Robinson, and I'm the Director of Hospital Services. I've been working here in the South Eastern Trust since February 2017, and just like Rushing, I'm a nurse too. I've worked for many, many years in cancer services, and then, as I say, most recently here in South Eastern Trust in Women Acute Child Health and also in hospital services. And I think just on that, what's really important for me is not the hospitals, but the services. Mm-hmm. And we often talk about one hospital service, albeit in three sites. And those three sites have their own personalities and their own capabilities, and that is welcome and that is great. But we work as one service, and that's something that we pick up and we emphasize every morning at 9 o'clock. And that's Monday through Sunday. We meet together. And I have to say, in recent times, maybe one of the silver linings from the cloud of COVID is I think it's really pulled us all together, and the comms are a lot better. So we often talk about, as I say, one hospital service, albeit in three sites. So, John, you were asking there about the Ulster and some of the social media posts about being under pressure. Yeah, it's something that we have been posting. It's something that other trusts have been posting as well. You might have seen them maybe for Craigavon and Antrim and maybe Belfast as well. And we only send those out when we are under significant pressure. And there have been instances of that, as Roisin said. I don't think we've really experienced anything like this in our careers, and maybe not even in the last 50, 100 years. It's just been really pressured and really, really difficult for staff, and real credit to the team, as you said, Roisin, just across the hospital services. They've really worked really hard. Mm-hmm. When we are under pressure, it can depend on the type of pressure. Often, as you know, if we have capacity issues in our beds, there's some talk about this today on the news, where you could actually be at 107% capacity, which just sounds ridiculous. I mean, it's 7% over where you should be in full. But that's because we maybe have some patients waiting on trolleys to come in. And often, John, that's where the pressure is. it's not in minor injuries, and it's not in patients who come up and are seen and go within 4 hours. In fact, mm-hmm. some of our data for those patients presenting for that are best in region, so we're really proud of that, and that's great. Where we send out texts is where we maybe have as many as 60 patients waiting on trolleys to come into the hospital, and those are patients that are beyond the capabilities and the expertise of the minor injury stream. Those are patients who are really sick and need in, maybe to a respiratory ward or to cardiology ward. So it's a different type of pressure, but certainly we do, when we send that out, it's because we're under pressure for beds.
On the hours, do you have the hours? Are there any opportunities for extending the hours or the nurse bed minor injuries?
Yeah, I would say not at the minute, but is it something that we're working towards? I would say yes, John. I mean, if we could have more staff, we would open it up that wee bit longer during the week. And minor injuries, we know, serves the population really well in Down, particularly on a Saturday and Sunday. And we saw that. We did a leaflet drop to caravan parks and that during the summer, just so people could know when we're open and when we weren't. And we saw a spike, maybe a patient's attending for minor injuries, so sporting injuries, maybe kids out and about on a Saturday and Sunday. So that responded well to that. So if we had more staff, we would, I think, is the bottom line, John.
And the other thing to come on that again, and I'm more than happy, is, you know, we're in touch with our clinical teams all the time, and to say is, you know, we know that across the UK there's a massive shortage of emergency medical doctors. We all know that. But so we're looking at saying, well, you know, what other forms of staffing can we bring in to complement the team to continue to provide services? And we're looking at, there's a role called Physician Associates. That's a new program started, and also a more advanced nurse practitioners to complement the staffing challenges. So we've managed to get one new emergency nurse practitioner. She's now in the rota, and they're saying this allows time next week for the EMPs to start at 8 in the morning, you know, rather than 9. So that's very good. And we're also looking at just exploring with GP out of hours how to maximise referrals in the system. So, you know, we're pushing it. There's a big meeting with 100 GPs in the Down area on the 18th of November. And this is where our clinical teams are meeting with our GPs to maximise referrals into the system. But the thing is, as well, it's not as we're not sitting with not enough referrals or empty beds. The beds are full, but it's just in terms of good communication. But I would really want, again, there's something there about, you know, the public are happy with the service at this moment in time. We're rerunning the patient satisfaction, and we'll have that as well. But all I'm trying to share with you is, it's very important that the public can feel confident in. If you phone that number, you want to get speaking to somebody who's clinical. It's not like phoning your GP. You know, we're hearing a lot of challenges at the moment. People can't get through to their GP. They're finding they have to wait days and things. Urgent care is urgent care. You're phoning through to a clinical person. You're getting a time the same day or the very next morning to come up. You're going to be seen. You're not waiting. We'll make a decision. If you need admitted into the Down, you'll be into the Down. If you shouldn't be coming there in the first place, and there's greater risk and you should be going to the Ulster, then that's where you're going to go. But the vast majority of people are coming up, and, you know, really, this model is going to be, I think, be looked at. And now we have started this model last week, actually, in the Lygon Valley Hospital, and we'll keep them both under review. So hopefully that's helpful. Do we want to keep going with questions, or would you want Jamie to talk about the mental health?
I don't see anybody indicating that. I became the left Damien go, just I think, you know, we're quarter two almost now, so maybe...
No, that's absolutely fine. Damien, thanks very much for joining us. Damien is based in the Downshire, covers hospital community mental health. He's absolutely brilliant. We're very lucky to have him. He's worked in the Trust for years with me, but he's absolutely a wonderful advocate for mental health services. And again, if we were to establish some sort of partnership or pathfinder for him, I would just love to work with all of you in relation to mental health services across the community. I really would love that we could all go, we could look at all of our services together. Damien?
So, thank you for that introduction, Roisin. I'm sure I won't live up to that, but... thanks to everyone for having us today, and in the particular interest in mental health services. So if it's appropriate, what I intended to talk about was maybe just give a quick overview of services with particular emphasis on those in the Down area. Then some key developments that we have talked about our approach to suicide prevention, and then some of the challenges that we're experiencing within our system at the moment. So if that's okay, I'll follow that plan. So you will know that mental health services in Down and in Downpatrick in particular have a long history with the Downshire Hospital, but clearly the profile of provision has changed over the last number of decades, probably the last four decades where services have moved predominantly from hospital-based to community-based services. And within our trust, we have a three-sector approach. So we have the Down sector, the Lisburn sector and the Ards and North Down sector. So in the Down sector, we have a mental health assessment centre, and our assessment centres are our first point of contact for all referrals into our services. Right. Can people see me? No?
Yeah, we can still see you.
Oh, right.
We can see you.
Yeah.
Just keep talking loud.
Okay, and I suppose I should also just mention that mental health services continue to operate throughout the COVID period. We did stand down as a small number of services to ensure that we were able to continue to provide our essential 24-hour services, but all of those services are back up and running. And throughout the COVID period, we continue to see people face-to-face, particularly those with emergency or urgent care needs, and more we are seeing more people face-to-face and offering that choice to individuals. We did learn of the benefits of the blended approach to patient contact over the COVID period. It was well received. People who had virtual contact with ourselves reported that they were more than satisfied with that level of service provision. So we do want to continue with that approach, but obviously the choice is there for individuals. So just go back to the assessment centre. So overall, our trust receives about 8,000 referrals per year, of which about 1,200 come through the Down sector. So roughly about 15% of our referrals. At the initial assessment, the practitioner will determine the most appropriate pathway for individuals, and that might involve our statutory services or the community and voluntary sector, or indeed signposting people to services out there in the community. But one option is our community mental health teams, and our community mental health teams are there to serve people who have moderate to severe mental health problems, and services will be offered or current treatment will be offered on either a time-limited or long-term basis where people have particularly complex needs and may indeed require a service for the remainder of their lives. Our home treatment services then is effectively our hospital at home service. It operates 7 days a week, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. based in the Finiston House. We will see people sometimes on a daily basis, sometimes even more frequently than that. That is all dependent on individual needs and the risks that individuals present with. Within our hospital service within the Down, we obviously have our acute mental health inpatient unit. We have 25 beds in the Down. That's 25 out of 76 acute beds. So we have 27 acute beds in Lagan Valley and 24 acute beds in the Ulster. Last year, we had 672 admissions. That was a bit of a reduction from the year before. Last year was obviously a very unusual year. So normally we have in and around 100 plus admissions, so roughly 60 admissions per month. And the Down would share about 30% of those admissions. On the Downshire site then, we have Ward 27 in Downshire, which is a locked environment. It provides current treatment for people who present with acutely disturbed, challenging behaviour. All of those patients will be detained under the mental health order. But we do have a mixed model of care there. So we have people with very acute needs and then others who have long-term needs. And that's not an appropriate model of care. We're seeking to address that. So you might be aware of some construction works happening at the back of the Downshire, and that's because we're developing a new six-bedded dedicated psychiatric intensive care unit where we will be able to provide people with purpose-built environments, single ensuite accommodation. So that's a very welcome development in the local area. Moving on to our addictions team. So we have community addictions teams in each of our sector. And we have a service in the down sector, obviously. There has been a change in the profile of patients attending our community addiction services over recent years, where more and more people are attending with drug misuse as opposed to alcohol misuse. So roughly around 40% of our caseload now contains people with primary drug misuse problems. And then we obviously have a cohort as well who also have both drug and alcohol misuse problems. And about 20% of our referrals to community addiction services are from within the Down area. Ward 15, or Shimna House in Downshire, is a inpatient addictions unit. So provides services to people from across the region. In our case, it's predominantly South Eastern Trust, Southern Trust and Belfast Trust who avail of the service. We did step down the addictions unit during the initial COVID crisis, but we have been stepping that service up again since last summer. And we currently have 10 out of our 12 commission beds operation. We plan to move to full provision in the near future. We have a very vibrant supported living service, and indeed 41 of our 52 places provided by the trust are within Downpatrick area. So we have Arglass Road, we have Sleeve Bran and Stream Street facilities, and those services support people live in the community, helping those individuals enjoy a quality of life with a rehabilitation and recovery focus. Just to touch on a number of trust-wide services that are delivered in Down, so we have a condition management programme, which is about helping people manage health conditions to enable them to return to work. And it mightn't be a surprise to you that post-COVID, we are experiencing a huge increase in referrals through to that service. We have a dialectical behaviour therapy service, which is aimed at people with emotionally unstable personality disorder, sometimes described as borderline personality disorder. And it uses a range of individual and group therapy to help people develop skills to prevent and reduce the level of self-harm that those people might be engaged in. People with serious mental illness are known to experience more serious physical health problems at the same time. So we have introduced a physical health monitoring service, which is aimed at supporting those individuals, manage their medications, provide a monitoring and screening service so that they get their physical health care needs are met. And a number of years ago, we introduced the multi-agency triage team, which is a service delivered in partnership with the police, the ambulance service and Belfast Trust. And we respond to people experiencing crisis who have come into contact with the emergency services. And that team have been particularly successful in reducing some of the individuals who are brought to ED by the police. It only operates at the weekends at this stage, but as part of the overall strategy for the development of mental health services, it is envisaged that that service will be extended to other trusts and extended across the week. You may have heard of our Recovery College, which is which offers educational courses about mental health and recovery. Those courses are co-designed and co-delivered by people with lived experience and practitioners from within our service. That service proved to be very successful over the COVID period. Largely, courses were provided online, but a huge number of people, over and above the number of people who would have attended face-to-face training programmes, we're able to link in online, so that was very, very helpful for many people who were experiencing isolation or during the lockdown phase. So we also have a wellbeing therapy hub. The wellbeing therapy hub is provided by the trust through which we triage referrals from primary care and identify an appropriate community provider to deliver what is often talk of therapy hubs or talk of therapies to individuals. That service started in Lisburn, but through some innovative funding arrangements, we've been able to extend that into Down and into North Down and Ards, and that service has really taken off in this area. So those are a range of services that we're offering within Down. Some of the key developments, I talked about the six-bedded PICU unit under construction. We also launched the Wellness Recovery Network in Down in August, and it's a service facilitated by the Trust and led by the Trust, but very much based on service users using their lived experience to help one another, to help individuals learn new coping skills and strategies that they have developed themselves. We are present introducing a perinatal mental health service, which will be available across the Trust, and primarily will be delivered to people within their homes or on a clinic basis, including in the Down area. And that's obviously for women, for pregnant women, and also in the postnatal period, up to 12 months postnatal. So that's a very exciting development. We are refurbishing Finniston House to create a community mental health hub, a modern community mental health hub. So we've completed two of the four phases there, but it's our intention to develop the full facility to enable the transfer of other mental health services into that particular building. We've also submitted a business case to the Department of Health and to the Health and Social Care Board to create a 10-bedded rehabilitation unit, possibly in Ward 27 if we're able to discharge our long-term patients from that facility. Many of you will know that there are bed pressures within the mental health system also. And one solution to those is to provide longer term inpatient treatment to people who really are stuck in an acute mental health ward, but who need longer term care and rehabilitation. So we're one of two trusts to submit a bid to the department for that. We're developing our peer strategy, and that's our strategy associated with people with lived experience. So it's very much our ambition that every service within mental health, the mental health team, will have someone with lived experience providing support and using their lived experience to help others recover. We also want to develop the input of service users into areas such as recruitment and selection of staff. We have a new community rehabilitation service, and that's initially based in the Rimpatrick area and will essentially help support people with long-term, serious, severe mental illness, particularly those living within our supported living accommodation. And I've mentioned Towards Zero Suicide. Towards Zero Suicide is a regional approach using a number of interventions and actions to try and reduce suicide rate among service users known to our services. Research would illustrate that up to 30% of service users or people who die by suicide are known to service or have been known to service in the previous 12 months. So our Towards Zero Suicide approach is about developing those interventions which will target those individuals. So it's about improved safety planning, which is working collaboratively with individuals and their families to provide a safer arrangements around the care of individuals. It's about... Sorry?
I'm just saying, is that you coming to an end? Because I know that Councillor Hammond only got five more minutes before the Southern Trust will be wanting to join in.
Yeah. Well, that's essentially it.
Okay.
Thanks. Hopefully that's helpful there.
Yeah, thanks, Roisin. Thanks very much, Damien. I had read through your presentation as well. So just to remind members that it is on decision time if you just want to go into it in more depth. I had a wee question for you, Damien, if you don't mind, and it's not putting you on the spot, but sure. See, terms of, well, firstly, I was glad you mentioned the Wellness Network. I was lucky enough to be at the launch of that and got to talk to James and stuff. I thought it was really, really good, especially in terms of the peer mentor. And I think that's a fantastic project that you're doing, because like, if anybody would understand, you know, mental health and addictions and stuff, it's somebody that's already been through it and potentially come out the other side. So I think that's really, really good. One thing that struck me about Shimla and the 12, I think you said there was 12, there's 10 beds, but there's usually 12. But I noticed on the report that you obviously service regionally as well. 12 beds didn't seem like an awful lot to me. You know, would you want to expand on that? Or I suppose you're saying, yeah, I would, but it's the logistics of it. But maybe 12 is enough. I don't know. It's just a wee question I have.
We do think 12 beds is enough. The service is predominantly a community-based service. It's those individuals who present with most medical risk or risk associated with their detoxification who require inpatient care. So there is a waiting list at the moment, but that has arisen out of the fact out of COVID. But we ordinarily don't have a waiting list, so we do think 12 beds is enough. And it's 12 beds. That there are two other units in Northern Ireland, one in the West and one in the Northern Trust. So it's not only South East Trust providing that inpatient service.
Okay, thank you. And see, in terms of the perinatal mental health, is there a time frame for that? That's something that I've been to a couple of presentations about that as well. It's probably some heart being a mother of three children myself. So, you know, it's fantastic to see that coming locally too, but is there like a time frame for it?
Yeah, that service will be commencing very, very soon. We have appointed a small number of staff on a temporary basis. We're going through a substantive recruitment exercise currently, and we're developing our protocols and systems to ensure that the service that we deliver will be safe. But we'll begin to see patients very, very soon.
Thank you. If anybody else has any questions for Damien, just and see Shane's trying to get in now, so we're moving into the sun. News are all happy enough. Okay. Well, thank you, Damien, Roisin, and David, for taking time out of your busy schedules to speak to us today. I'm sure I speak for everybody that it's very much appreciated, and it's also good to get updates from you. Okay. Thank you.
And can I just finish with saying,
thank
you very much, you know, because having the session is really important to us. You know, it's so important for us, and I know it's important for you in terms of good two-way communication. And I'm more than happy, again, if you hear queries or concerns, you know, just come directly into my office. A number of you do that. There's no problem at all. I'll check anything out and I'll come back to you. I do want you to know that, you know, we are absolutely, you know, genuinely committed to doing the best we possibly can across the Down area. I can promise you that. And we will do what's possible, you know, and what's appropriate and what's safe, and we'll do it in partnership with you. So I will be reaching out to think, if you have ideas, I'm asking something of you. If you have ideas about how we could, you know, establish some sort of meaningful partnership forum, pathfinder, whatever way you want to look at it. But, you know, let's do something like that, and let's look at maybe involving the young people, you know, who are going to be using our service in 10, 20, 30 years' time. Wouldn't it be great if we could get, like, maybe a youth council or a youth voice or some? I know there are lots of different agencies, and the work that I do, a number of you know that I chair the Community Planning Partnership Board for Newry Morning Down, and I do it for one reason only, because genuinely and personally committed to community planning and working in partnership. And I would love to see a way forward that we could do this, you know, in a better way together. So thank you so much for that engagement. And I'm happy. I'll follow back up with either Una, yourself, or Kathy and Marie Ward, and look at, you know, how we can continue to have something regular, whatever you need, more than happy. And thank you. Thank you very much. And Damien, thank you so much. I'm sure everybody you can hear how proud we are.
I'm sure everybody can hear
health services. You know, there's so much increasing demand for these services. So it's not always about just the quantity, but it's about, you know, the range of options and, you know, really trying to work in partnership. I would really encourage, in fact, final point, if you can support, promote the Wellness Recovery Network, because I went to the recent one that launched out now in Lisburn, and that anyone at all, it's not anyone just, you know, with mental health challenges, but anyone who wants to focus on wellness, that's their line. So we all want to focus on wellness, And again, just something to reach out across the community for people to link in. It really was really heartening. And again, if you would want, I might ask Damien to send out more information about the Down Wellness Recovery to the council team there, and they can maybe upload that so that you would have that information. Anything you need that, you know, like things that you need at your fingertips, you know, whether it's the numbers for the urgent care centre, whether it's information about the vaccine, anything that helps you do your job better. And the final point I would say is, you know, it's, we're doing our best. That's all I was, you know, genuinely say to you. But, you know, it's so important for the staff to have your support and to recognise that, yes, there are challenges maybe in medical recruitment, but on the vast majority, touch wood, you know, staff want to come and work in the Down area in the Trust, and they feel that they have a good support and they're valued working in the Trust, and that's really important. We want to keep them working in the Trust and support them to stay working in this Trust. Lots of other areas have very significant challenges, and, you know, we do an awful lot of work to really encourage people to come. So thank you all very much. I know it was a rush, but we filled the hour, and hope you enjoy your conversation with Southern next, and happy to link in. Great to see so many faces. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Remiss of me not to say thanks to the staff as well on behalf of the Membership Council. You know that you've worked so, so hard through the pandemic and continue with your challenges. So if you can relay back, you know, whatever way to them, it would be very much appreciated.
I'll do that. Yeah. Thank you, David. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Have the Southern team then come on.
Yeah, they're on.
Yeah, okay. Hi, Shane and team, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm great, yeah.
Excellent.
Just lost my agenda, but... okay, so Shane, the format we took with the Southeastern was they made their presentation and then we just took in any questions afterwards. So
certainly.
If you're happy enough with that, yeah.
Yeah, that would be great. So if that's okay, then, you know, what I will do is I'll give a short introduction on around some of the big issues that we're facing into at the moment. Aldrina, who's one of my colleagues, Aldrina's on the screen there as well. Aldrina is Director of Performance Planning, Information, etc. So Aldrina is going to walk through a couple of the big issues in slightly more detail to give you some more information on that. And then obviously there's opportunity for questions. So more than happy if you're happy with that, Una, as a way forward. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Shane. Thank you.
Certainly. Well, look, thank you very much for the opportunity to meet this afternoon. I'm going to raise really where we are as an organization and say a couple of big issues and then hand on to Aldrina. Obviously, in the interim period between the last time we met, there's been a couple of letters that have come back and forth. I'm assuming that you are all in receipt of those letters. One was a general response to a series of questions that were raised around Daisy Hill and nursing, etc. The second one then specifically was with regards to mental health and the services we provide with regards to mental health. And again, more than happy to take questions on that. But in terms of big issues at the moment, a number of things I raised at our last Trust Board meeting and I'm going to raise with you today. The first of which is the current position with regards to the serious adverse incident which happened last year with regards to the COVID outbreak. And in terms of Daisy Hill, that was Mel Medical Ward, and in terms of Craig Avenant's haematology. And as you will recall, it made considerable news and there were questions from yourselves and others about the safety of the service that we provide across our hospitals. Just to make you aware, you will have seen that the Minister announced, I think probably about four weeks ago now, that we have now received the draft independent report. And that draft independent report is now with all of the families who had loved ones, or the patient themselves, who had loved ones who were COVID positive. And I would hope that the response to those consultations will be with us at the speed which the families wish to respond to them. And therefore, I'll be able to share the outcome of the report with you at council, I would hope, the next time we meet. I can't share a lot of that's in the report at the moment because, as you can appreciate, it is with the families and others. But it's a really important point because it was an area that you were concerned about last year in terms of safety. And I can make you aware we've now received that report and it is... I've just got a message that says the sound quality is bad. Can you hear me okay? Yeah, okay.
I'm
Yeah, I've not had a message from Microsoft Teams to say the sound quality is bad, please check your internet connection. I assume you can hear me, so I'll just ignore Microsoft.
Okay,
so that's the first big issue. The second big issue you'll be aware of since the last time we met is that the public inquiry into urology has been announced. And it is again something that you may wish to engage with. The public inquiry was on the back of a particular consultant that we had identified challenges with and resulted, we believe, we know, in patient harm. That is now a public inquiry. And again, I can't go into huge detail because it is a public inquiry. But what I would say is, as council, you may have residents who would be concerned about their own care or their loved one's care. And I would suggest that the best way to deal with that is either directly through us or interacting with the actual inquiry, because it's now a public inquiry that is being established, and we are currently providing information into that. So they're two very, very big things that have happened since the last time we met. The third big thing is then we're fully into looking at strategy development for the next 3 to 5 years. And it is important that we can find a vehicle to engage with the council to make sure that whatever strategies we are developing, they are fully inclusive of your thoughts and others. So we're looking at 3 big angles of strategy. One is about patient safety and quality. One is about our people, the people that work for us. And then one is about the overall direction of where the trust is going. And part of that overall direction is where is Daisy Hill Hospital going, which is important to you as a council. So we will be over the next, I suspect over the next couple of months, I would like to see the back of COVID. I think we all would. But if we can get to that point, we will be engaging with you to feed into the conversations we'll be having about where is Daisy Hill going. We've had huge investment in Daisy Hill the last 3 to 5 years in terms of the direct assessment unit, in terms of the emergency department, and it has grown considerably. We're going to have to find a way to continue to engage to get your thoughts and views in that. So we would intend to be building a strategy, a plan by next April. Okay. So we need to involve you in developing that plan. And undoubtedly, and it's part of the questions that you asked me, what is the future of general surgery? Okay, what is the future of general surgery? And particularly emergency surgery. And you asked me that. In the letter. What I would stress is that's part of the thing we'll be working our way through over the next couple of months is how can we provide really high quality, safe general surgical services to the whole of the population of the Southern Trust, including everyone in your council area. And we have a process to try and work through that. You're very well aware we have the Daisy Hill Pathfinder group, which is really important to us. And a lot of the Pathfinder people will be involved in conversations over the next number of months. I do think it's going to take us well into next year to have these conversations, maybe into the middle of the year. But we'll be engaging around what is the future and how do we make that future happen. So that's really where we are in terms of, the big ticket issues the last time we've met, SAI, urology, and then looking at the future planning for the hospitals and the trust as a whole. What I would say, without fail, the last year and a half has just been totally COVID focused. I mean, that's as simple as it gets. And therefore, a lot of the thinking about where we go to hasn't happened that much because we've been busy just managing the day to day. Because as you can appreciate, managing the day-to-day during a pandemic has been an absolute full-time job. And all of our staff have played an immense role. As you're very well aware, when we originally changed the model, Daisy Hill ED was closed for a short period. We returned that back last October, and Daisy Hill has played a huge part in managing the COVID journey. I think actually as we move forward, there's a huge opportunity in our theatres in Daisy Hill. And I said before, we use our theatres across the whole of the trust as a joint asset. And the potential of Daisy Hill theatres is actually quite enormous. And maybe we'll get onto that conversation. So that's the big ticket issues. There are 2 areas of Ars Aldrina to give a bit more detail on. One is we in health are heading into a new planning model. And we need to understand how we engage with the council around planning of services. So Aldrina can do a little bit on that. And then the second bit is we have the winter plan and we need you to know what that winter plan is and be able to engage with us on the winter plan. Because as you can appreciate, and you'll see it in every single newspaper and every single television article, you know that we are struggling. You know the demand that we have in health and social care far exceeds our resources. And I don't mean money necessarily, I mean human resource, people. We don't have enough of everyone to do the job. So we have produced a winter plan. There is still a gap in that winter plan, which means that it's still going to be a very, very, very hard winter. So I'm going to ask Aldrina to take over. I'll put myself on mute here. And she's just going to walk you through the winter plan, what's in it, where we're going to, and then there's an opportunity for questions. So Aldrina, do you want to come in?
I will indeed. Thanks very much, Shane, and thanks everyone for having us here today. Shane, I was going to pull up a plan on the page, but I'm having a little bit of connection difficulty. So I was wondering if there was any chance you could share, if you haven't got it handy, or else somebody just tell me how to share it from this, but I'm having a bit of connection problems here, so I just don't want to lose you all. If I go into the open share tray, I'm assuming that will allow me to do something from there. Let's see. Okay. No, it's not there. Can't do it from there. Shane, if I send you through, would you be able to open to the...
Yep, I will try and share it, Andrea, for you.
That'll do.
As you can tell, colleagues, we do not use Teams. We're a complete Zoom environment. So our own systems don't particularly like us using Teams. So we end up having technical difficulties. So if Aldrina, if you email it to me, I'll do my best to get it up from this end.
If you want to email it to me, I can share it for you.
Okay, perfect.
So if you email it to sarah-louise.taggart.
It's trying to do that. Sorry. Sarah spelled with an H?
Yeah.
Sarah.louise.
Sorry, Sarah. Sarah-Louise.taggart.
Louise.taggart.
At nmd.org. nmandd.org.
Okay, you can let me know if you get that. I'm going to copy you in, Shane, just in case there's any problems with that one. Okay. Yeah, apologies for that. Anyway, I'm having, as I say, some connection difficulties, so there's a wee bit of a delay. But what I'm looking to go through when you receive that, and if you do receive that, Louise, Sarah Louise, I don't think you have received it. Shane, you have. So if you could, it's Appendix 1 to the document, and
yeah,
I'll work from there. Okay, thanks very much. Okay, so just starting with the essentially what we want to talk about is what our winter plan looks like this year. And you'll be aware from the Minister's announcement last week that he has, in fact, published the winter plans from across the region at on Friday past there. So they are essentially very much operational documents. They're documents because of the nature, again, as Shane has said, of us managing in the course of a pandemic. There's quite a lot of moving parts. Traditionally, the winter plan would have been something we'd have done very much as a trust locally, and we would have looked to very much work out how we expand our capacity, et cetera, through the winter. But this year, and particularly since the onset of the pandemic, we're very much working as part of a region, and our interdependencies across the piece are absolutely unprecedented at this stage. So you can see that when you look at the document. And the full document is there and available in the public domain, as I say, on the department's website. But what I was going to do is just talk you through sort of a walking summary of what...
Well, hopefully that has come up on people's screen now, has it?
Yep, I can see it.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So we tried to put together a bit of a plan on a page, and it's handy for these sorts of purposes, just to give you a sort of running commentary on exactly what we have included in our plan. But there's a few contextual things, I suppose, that I want to highlight, because the document is quite, as I say, it's a lengthy document, it's about 48 pages, but it's covering the period of October, as in now, through to March 2022. And it's to take account this year, not just of winter pressures, which traditionally we would normally model out and assume, based on our previous winters, what we were expecting to see come through the door, essentially. But we know already that that's going to be really difficult to do. Can you hear me all right? Because I'm getting a wee bit of a back feed.
No, it's fine.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Good. It's just at my end.
Could you just zoom in a wee bit? Just the text is quite small.
Okay, Shane, could you zoom her in? Yeah. Better.
Oh, well, sorry, Shane, you're sharing.
Yeah, he's my technical assistant today.
Oh, that's as much as I can zoom in. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's better.
Is it better? Okay. Okay, so it covers, as I said, not just winter pressures, but also what we understand to be our COVID demands that are likely to come through. But again, a lot of uncertainties around that. As you know, COVID and the way it behaves within the community is very much what predicates how we respond as a trust, because we see the implications of that back in the hospital system and wider. But it's also based on some regional modelling for this winter. And what we're likely seeing this winter is very much a coinciding of COVID and normal winter pressures with the incidence of flu, for example, and in pediatrics for RSV virus, respiratory virus. And those are things last winter, due to the lockdown, that we wouldn't have experienced in great detail. So there's quite a lot of unknowns about what that means for the pattern of how flu will behave. Lifted. So, through the regional group and made it.
Is that it then for everybody, or? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is, colleagues.
Oh.
Breaking up.
Oh, I apologise. I really apologise. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take my own camera. Oh, it is off already. Oh.
Okay. Would you like me to walk through it, Aldrina? Can people hear me clearly?
Yeah, Shane.
Yeah. Okay. Aldrina, do you want me just to sort of give an overview and walk through it? And then if you want to come in on comments, that would be helpful, yeah?
That would do, by exception if there's any key points at the end.
No problem.
Thank you. Apologies.
So, no problem. So, colleagues, as you can see, what we're trying to do, as Aldrina said, we know this year there's going to be a clash of flu, COVID, and other respiratory conditions. So what we have put in place, and the way this plan should be read, is that we're looking at stuff to do with avoiding admissions, so trying to keep people away from hospital if they don't need to be in hospital, which is all of the yellow stuff down the left-hand side, or maybe even orangey-yellow. The bit in the middle is, how do we make sure if people do come into hospital, we get them quickly through hospital? And then the third bit of the plan is, how do we fit this all together as a whole of Northern Ireland? Okay. So you will see in the things that we're trying to avoid admissions will be things like making sure we really get people to use the phone first process, which is ring before you come to the door, and looking at things like the booking and advice and triage service, which is in Daisy Hill, which allows doctors to call our emergency doctors and get really good advice and help the patient rather than walking through the door. So as you can see in this, and we can send this on, councillors, to the UT, you can have a look at the whole thing. It is online, it is on our website, and it was made public yesterday by the minister. But you will see the things that we're trying to do to try to, as I say, in the left-hand side, help people avoid coming to hospital. The bit in the middle then is about how do we help people through our hospitals. And one of the really important parts of this is that we have to help people get out of hospital once they are well. So the kind of things we're looking at is additional beds in our statutory residential homes, additional intermediate care. So that's the kind of care that isn't in hospital, but is in the community that will help people get home. And we are looking at really enhanced 7-day working, which means that there'll be decisions will be taken on patients any time during the 7-day working week. Our ask to you and the community is that when people are ready to go home, they go home. So if we end up creating additional resource in our statutory homes, then we need people to go there. And we do have times when people say, no, I'm not going to leave. I'm going to stay in hospital until you give me absolutely everything I need in my own home. And we're asking the community this winter that if you are ready to go home, if the doctor has said you're ready to go home and we can provide you with an intermediate scheme, then we need people to take that. Because every single person who is in a hospital bed is stopping somebody else getting into that hospital bed and backing up in our emergency department. And we know that it is not safe to have people backing up in the emergency department. So that's the key bit in the middle. As I say, and then the regional and extreme contingency beds is where do we go if it really, really starts to fall over? And you can see what our plans would be there. We'd be changing our education centre into an inpatient ward. We'd be actually closing our ambulatory areas and turn them into wards, etc. Even after everything we do, we still believe that there is a gap of about 200 beds worth of resource in the Southern Trust for winter. Okay, so what that means, if we really want to make sure everyone is seen on time in ED, we really want to make sure that everyone gets through our hospitals, then we across the whole of the Southern Trust, and that includes Daisy Hill and Craigavon and South Tyrone and Lurgan, would need an additional 200 beds, which would be resourced with doctors, nurses, AHPs, social workers, etc. And that's why it's really important that we can do everything that's on this page, but we still will not be able to guarantee that every single person who needs our help will get it in a timely manner. And that is not a good place to be, but we have exhausted everything we can exhaust to make sure we provide a good service, a safe service for the patients and clients. So that gives you, as I say, our plan on a page. And I'm going to suggest that I turn that plan on a page off, and then we can all see you again, and then we can obviously go into any kind of conversations around that. So let me just turn the screen off, and hopefully that will be me back. I hope that Aldrina can still hear us and be involved in the conversation would be helpful. But that gives you an understanding of where we are going this year. So we really, for the rest of the year, are managing out the winter plan. We are not looking strategically at major change. We're trying to manage the winter plan because, unfortunately, COVID hasn't gone away, and the pressure on our organization is truly enormous. So I'm happy to take any comments and questions on any part of what you've heard in the last 15 minutes.
Thank you, Shane and Aldrina. Okay, we do have questions in. Firstly, we have Mr. Casey.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks very much, Shane, for your colleague's presentation there. And I didn't take the opportunity of actually emailing my questions, which I probably should have done. But most of them centre around GP services. Shane, if I could, is there any possibility of revisiting full face-to-face with GPs? And GPs, is it alleged that GPs won't sign on to the new community treatment centre? What's the future for it? And the last one I would have is a personal horror story from my wife, if I can relate that. Her history is she has sponge discs in her back, and she's been living on painkillers for the last 10, 15 years. She did get a scan in 2007, was recommended surgery, but didn't take it because the prognosis was it was a hit or miss at the time. Now, she was poleaxed this last fortnight with her back, couldn't move. Contacted GP. GP says, I can't see you, you can't see me. What I will do, I'll email an emergency MRI scan to Craigavon and get you dealt with there. She went there on, we both went there on the 11th, at 2:45 presented ourselves. Most of them knew nothing about it, but she was referred to ED, and you talked about backing up in ED, and I mean, I have to say it was horrific. I mean, the majority of people that were actually referred by GPs as well, therein lies another major problem. We were there for over 11 hours and she still didn't see a GP or a doctor rather in that whole time in Craigavon. And her health broke down completely. I had to take her out of it at 4:15 in the morning after being there from 3 o'clock the previous day. I took her home and I contacted the GP next morning. So, didn't know that she was going to be triaged, which is a COVID test and then blood tests, and then told to wait until you've been sent for to go to, in the horror case of the yellow zone. This is at 3:15 in the morning. The time kept changing, the waiting time from 4 hours to 5 hours to 7 hours and up to 11 hours, which I thought was an absolute nightmare. So we got to the yellow zone. I wheeled her to the yellow zone because she's in a wheelchair the whole time. And when we got there, it was actually a hospital ward, full and in darkness, except for a light in the corner where I had a wheeler into. And the nurse said to me, what are you doing here? And I said, how is she supposed to get here? Crawling on hands and knees along the corridor. She says, you shouldn't be here. Well, I'm a husband. I had to take her here. No one else was going to do it. Got a call about an hour after that again to Brady. It was my wife, Brady, in a terrible state. She wanted to go home. She couldn't. The nurse said, you probably wouldn't see a doctor until at least 9:30 in the morning. That's from 3:00 the previous day. So I took her home, Shane. Absolute nightmare. But therein lies a huge problem. As I said, majority of people at that ED were referred by the GP. When we left at 4:20 in the morning, there were still 30 to 40 people there. Thanks very much for that. But my question is in around face-to-face with GPs and the Community Treatment Centre. Thanks, okay. Shane.
Sorry, Chair.
No, I was just going to say, do you want to pull them together or would you want to answer them as they come in, Shane? What suits you better?
I don't really mind. However you want to run it.
Well, sure, go ahead and answer Charlie's.
Charlie, the first, Councillor Casey, the first thing is please, outside of this room, make contact with me about that experience of your wife, okay? And we will look into that because I think that is really important and that is not the way, and I'm very sorry, that's the experience you had. So please make contact with me outside of this and we will get that looked into. In terms of the GPs, as you know, we in Trust don't run the GPs. I mean, they're part of the health system, but they're not employed by us. We don't run them. And therefore, I think it is important that the council should ask to engage with maybe the BMA or maybe the Commissioner of GP Services, because we don't run GPs. Okay. What I would say is that when we have looked at the information of what we're getting from GPs, lots of people in our emergency department are coming via their GP. So you are correct, Charlie. Lots and lots of people have come via the GP. But what I would say is most of the people, and we've ordered this, most of the people need to be with us. So they're sick people. What we've seen this year more than ever is the level of sickness is really high. And we've had very few people in our emergency departments who aren't sick. Okay. Now that we've ordered that on certain days. So what I would say is they might be coming via the GP or not being able to get a call to the GP, whatever the case may be. But actually the vast majority when they come to us are sick and they need our help. The Care and Treatment Centre, I'm going to ask Aldrina to come in terms of the GPs because I know that's a challenge, but Aldrina?
Yeah, no problem. Thanks. And thanks, Charlie, for the question. Yeah, there's been a bit of coverage in relation to the proposed new developments in the Community Care and Treatment Centre. And you're quite right. The GPs at this stage from the Nearing Health Village indicated they aren't going to be joining us in the building. That said, what we are looking at is what we call the GMS space that was designated in that building. We are looking at how that will be used. And people may be aware that there's been some developments on, for example, multidisciplinary teams in primary care, as well as some of our own trust services. So we are currently working through that in the planning process, Charlie, with regard to what we're putting into that space that would have been earmarked for GPs. So it will be primary care facing services and it will be community based services, but it just won't be the ones that we had originally thought might be in terms of actual GP practice.
Really appreciate that. Thank you very much for that.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Burns?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And thanks, Aldrina and Shane, for the presentation on the winter programme. It's quite useful for us to navigate the next couple of months with that information. I have a key specific question to ask. It was based on the question that you replied, Shane, that is in our packs. The question that came from the health working group, and it was specifically to get an update on the numbers of postponed medical procedures. Now, as a result of COVID-19, the response back, and the reason why I raised this, and don't take this as being overly critical, is the response back was that we have been able to maintain the majority of medical outpatient clinics. That's not what's been asked, because that response doesn't either equip us, inform us to do anything with. Because to have an effect on people's behaviour in COVID-19, we need to know how many procedures have been cancelled. And I'm going to go into a specific issue. I'm not going to obviously touch on any names or anything, but the last report that we got on cancelled cancer procedures, that we had, I think it was nearly 58-59% of people were seen within the 62 days. That is nearly half of the people with a suspected case of cancer not being seen within the time frame of 62 days. Now, that information was obviously back in March. Where are we with that now? Because a patient or a constituent of ours in the Sligullion area, I went and took the time, and I suppose other councillors may have been contacted as well, but after being contacted by one of those cases, I went and took the time to go and hear what their experience was like, and it's bloody horrendous. I mean, first of all, from the end of July, from they got the notification letter to their GP that there was a tumour identified, they were told that the letter would be sent out to them and to wait for further steps to follow in that letter. They have not received that letter. 85 days later, they have yet to receive that letter. So that family had to navigate those next steps themselves. And to listen to their experience and navigating that, it is horrendous. They are ringing out and reaching out to everybody to try and get this advanced. Now, the 62-day target, it's now sitting at the 85 today, and still they're no further on to get treatment for this. And just looking at the stats in March, they're one of many families right across Northern Ireland. So when that question is asked on the number, and they had their consultant appointment deferred, postponed twice. They had their surgical review deferred three times. You know, so, and then I know there's a lot of other families in the same situation. So when we ask a question on the numbers of postponed medical appointments, consultant appointments, we need those numbers. Because that is how we as elected reps put pressure on people to change their behaviour. Saying you want to keep people out of hospitals, you want people to be responsible, take off on the vaccine and that. When people realise that their choices are having these drastic effects on families up and down this country, it will have an effect on them. So if we could get those numbers, that would be key. But just a wee bit of maybe a response to that family as well of, maybe it's communication between GPs, but they should not be trying to navigate this themselves. And then just to touch on a comment that you had said, you talked there about the potential of Daisy Hill theatres is enormous, is the words you used. And I understand that you said that's a conversation we'll have on a different day, so I don't want to get into it today, but you said it'll go on till maybe next April before the plan and the strategy is published. Can I request that we do have a meeting like this in the next 8 to 12 weeks where we go through that in detail, that it's not left until early next year and then we're getting something sort of served on us, that we'll have a meeting like this to go through all the detail of what the enormous opportunities is with Daisy Hill. Yeah. But yeah, just maybe just get a response on that specific question on the figures. Thanks, Jeff.
In terms of the figures, we absolutely have those. I'm not too sure why they didn't get those. So in terms of the 62-day target, I'm sure Aldrina can tell you where we are on that now, etc. But can I just, I think it's really important to set why we are where we are. And what I mean by that is I don't want any family to wait. Okay, I really don't. But can I just, and it's really important to put this in the context, okay? We have been running an intensive care unit, albeit in Craigavon, which has been double the footprint of our normal intensive care unit. What that means and what it has meant for the last 4 months is I have had no theatre nurses and no anaesthetists in the whole of the trust who were not working in ICU. Because if I double the size of my ICU, every single anaesthetist and every single theatre nurse has to work in the ICU. Therefore, I could not run my theatres. Now, what that means is I could not do cancer surgery. I didn't choose not to do cancer surgery. I could not do cancer surgery. And therefore, there's a direct link between COVID and cancer, a direct link. Every ICU bed I have to open means I cannot use the same staff to do operations on people with cancer. Now, what we're trying to do now is downturn, and we've been able to do so, downturn our ICU, so it's not double anymore. It's about 30% more, I think, of this morning. And that is allowing us to start opening up theatre slots in Daisy Hill and South Tyrone and Craigavon to allow us to start to make our way through those lists. So what we've always tried to do is keep the really urgent, time-critical slots available, and we share that across the whole of Northern Ireland. So what happens is our surgeons and surgeons across the whole of Northern Ireland every single week look at who is the sickest person with regards to time-critical surgery and which ones can we do. But that means there's lots of people didn't get seen. But please be assured, it's not because of lack of efficiency. We don't care. Every single person I had was in my ICU delivering COVID. Now, that opens up a big moral set of questions. Should we have been doing stuff for COVID and not for, and that really is a debate for the COVID inquiry, okay? But that's how we've got to where we've got to, Pete. And what we're now doing is trying to rebuild.
I think it's really important. I need to state that I'm not being critical on, you know, you should be doing cancer surgeries. I'm well aware of that. I've explained to people over the last couple of months the issue about, well, the anaesthetists are being used in COVID wards. You need anaesthetists for cancers. That's the problem. What I'm asking is, I'm bleeding with you for, is the stats. Give us those figures. Give us those cancer patients. We can use that and to help out in terms of people and what they're doing. So tell us how stark the situation is.
If I can commend, if I could commend just on back of that, and happy to do so, Peter, because really what you need to understand is the bit that Shane was describing where we are currently. Is so, for example, even when we do create capacity in our theatres, it may well be that the people who have their surgery in our theatres might not even be from the southern area. We are working as part of a collaborative to get people seen and as urgently as possible based on that. But what I could do is agree maybe after this, if it's different by specialty, and it's different because some things can be done on some sites that other ones can't be, etc. So there's a whole prioritization process. So it's important maybe for you to get a wee bit of context around that process as well. So happy to do that and provide you with some stats. At a high level, what we report and what you can easily see on our public documents is where we are against the 62-day target, which is where you started on in the conversation. And certainly we can provide that. That's not a problem at all. But it is a very high level target. It doesn't tell you a whole lot to have that detailed conversation. So it might be useful if you had a bit more detail around the process so that you could understand that and qualify any responses with constituents, etc. So happy to help whatever way.
Would it be helpful to set up a very quick meeting, Peter, that we could sit down with you and whoever else? And I'm talking maybe the next week or 2 weeks.
That'd be great, because I'm not going into the specifics. See, even the 25% of those waiting is urology, urological. I want to go into those specifics.
We can say. And then my comment about the opportunity in Daisy Hill Theatres is massive. So, for example, in the phase one, we did breast surgery there, which hadn't been done in 15 years. We did urology. We did all cesarean sections. They are brilliant theatres, okay? So that's why I think there's a huge opportunity to use the theatres in Daisy Hill and really use them and get through a huge amount of surgery. And again, more than happy to come back and talk about those kind of plans as well.
Thanks. So just for clarity, will you be coming back into this forum again to discuss the item agenda, or?
Well, whichever way you would like us to do so. I mean, whether it's in this forum or whether you would like, we don't mind. I don't know how often does this forum meet, because I'd like to be able to get you back something pretty quickly. So what would you think?
We meet quarterly, do we?
Yeah,
I ask that we have a meeting that, you know, this forum, but a special meeting of this forum for that, you know, in the next 4 to 6 weeks.
More than happy.
Okay, well, we can take that as an action then. Councillor Mulgrew, you're next on the...
Yeah, Chair, and like others, unfortunately, my connectivity is a bit iffy, so I'll keep it as brief as possible. I want to add my voice to Charlie's comments about GPs. We're inundated, and I know it's not your responsibility, but I do think we all need to collectively be doing something about it. We're inundated with complaints about GPs, and I take on board, you know, the referrals and, you know, emergency departments are still seeing sick people, but I know even within my own household, you know, someone paid £75 to see a GP privately because they didn't think that they were an emergency situation, but it was certainly a situation that was ongoing and had been for quite a while, and they were concerned about it. I'm opposed to private medicine. Everybody belonging to me has worked and paid their taxes, and you know, it's something that really irritates the hell out of me, to be quite honest. I was also told by a member of staff that in a 2-day period there were 104 referrals of children to the emergency department from GPs, you know, with colds, flus, coughs, that type of thing. that were told that, you know, when they're asked for the symptoms over the phone, the parents were advised to take them to the emergency department. And I totally get, you know, that if a child is very, very unwell, of grandchildren myself, one who had croup recently and he needed to go and be nebulised, I totally get that. But there's a big step in a child having a cough or a cold and needing to go to an emergency department, you know, and I think that is where the difficulty is. Now, that's what staff are saying, that they're seeing people that should be treated by their GP. So that's the first comment. The comment on the discharge, there's no problem. There's no doubt of bed blockage within the trust because there isn't the social care packages available for people whenever they come home. I would have concern over the discharge to a home environment because I wonder psychologically how we're going to deal with that in older people. Because a lot of older people, when they take that step, even if it is only for a respite after a major surgery or something, psychologically it's a blow for them. Not them all, but for a lot of older people. And I just wonder how we're going to be able to present that to our older people, that that's not the beginning of the end for them to be put into a residential care setting. You know, I wonder psychologically how that is going to be received. While we hope that people will see it as only a stepping stone in the right direction, also bearing in mind the care package in the community is so difficult at the minute. You know, what guarantees are they going to have that it will only be for a time-restricted time, that it isn't going to bleed into 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks because that elusive care package still remains out of control. The other thing, they call first, yeah, I mean, I think the call first was a good idea. However, I do know that within the in Daisy Hill Emergency Department, people still turned up. And even if you had gone through the call first and the triage, you went through the triage again when you got to Daisy Hill. And a lot of people would have said, you know, this doesn't seem to be making much difference to us. Whether that was true or not, I don't know. Staffing, you've touched on staffing and how a lot of the backlog is because those with specialised training and skills are being used in the intensive care. But I'm also aware that there are a number of staffing people that I'm hearing quite a lot of staff are leaving the service and going into banking because they can choose where the shifts that they do. By and large, their shifts are often, if not always, better paid. And they are, you know, I think that is going to be a problem for the trust in terms of staffing as we go forward. And is there anything being looked at where if you are a member of the bank, you are obliged to do so many hours, you know, as with the trust as well, that we have got to find a way of plugging that. And that goes back to staff not being properly paid and not being properly recognised, which none of us are going to sort out. But we are hemorrhaging staff, I feel. And what are we going to do about that? How can we? Bank is too attractive. And I totally understand why people that are exhausted or feel underappreciated are going down that route. But for the service, it's a disaster. So just any comments on that?
Yeah, thank you very much. I'll try and take them in the order. In terms of the issue with regards to children, we are seeing huge growth in children in our emergency departments, and actually much bigger this year than we'd seen previously. So you do raise an observation, which is correct. You know, we are seeing a lot of growth in children's in our emergency department. We're also seeing a lot of growth of very sick children who've actually ended up in hospital as well. But it is an observation. You are correct. I have no answer for you on this call today, but it is. In terms of the issue with an older person not wanting to go into intermediate care, I have a couple of points to that. The first one is that they remain in the same place on the queue for domiciliary care, whether they're in the hospital or whether they're in their intermediate care. So there's no kind of view, well, they're not in sight, therefore they're out of mind. That is not the case. They remain in the same place. But you make an interesting point about psychological safety and all that kind of stuff. I think what's really important to note is that acute hospitals are not safe. and I'm just being perfectly honest, acute hospitals are not a safe place to be if you're an older person. So first of all, their cognitive situation deteriorates radically in a hospital bed. Okay, so you might be thinking, oh, moving to somewhere intermediate is actually cognitively bad. Staying in a hospital bed is absolutely cognitively bad because people deteriorate their level of dependence. So actually, there's lots of evidence to say the least safe place is to leave an older person in a hospital bed. Now, we've got to find a way to package and sell that. We're not in a scaremongering business, so we're not trying to scare people. But the reality is both the physically safer place and the psychologically safer place is not to be in hospital. And there's huge evidence on that because people get sick and their cognitive basis deteriorates. So we have to find a way to be able to sell that so that people realize actually intermediate care is much better, much safer, and in fact increases their chance of independence rather than decreasing, and there's lots of evidence. So we need to find a way to package that evidence. Phone first, I'll ask Aldrina, because Aldrina's been heavily involved in our No More Silos work and what evidence we're starting to see around phone first, and then the staff leaving. In fact, I'll deal with that one first and then go back to Aldrina. I'm now responsible regionally for a piece of work across all trusts to see how and what we should be doing to try to enhance our ability to keep hold of staff and reduce our need for agency. And I'm more than happy at future meeting to come back and share what we're doing regionally. Because you are correct. Nurses particularly are making choices. Those choices are based around flexibility, sometimes based around money, but often flexibility. And we have to find a way to make the offering in the health service is as flexible and as financially rewarding that we can within the rules that we all have to live with as public servants. And I say I'm now chairing a regional piece of work across all five trusts to begin to unpick that to see what we can do pretty quickly. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say two levels. You're asking the right question. Whether it's making a difference, that is still something we're trying to work out. From the perspective at regional level, then there's a planned evaluation to look at the phone first, because as you know, that was a regional initiative to be rolled out across the piece. That said, what I can tell you is what we know from our own local evaluation in terms of what we're seeing so far. And initially, as you know, we had started it in Craigavon first and then rolled it out in terms of just trying to sort of improve the flow of patients. So what we have seen is we do all the appointing now for even minor injury streams, so the likes of South Tyrone Hospital, etc., which is a very, very busy unit. All that gets appointed through the phone first model. So it helps with that, making sure we create a safe place for people to attend. So that's the first thing. Secondly, one of the other things that we developed as part of, and the phone first is part of a range of things under the No More Silos banner, if you've heard that referenced. And one of the things we did as part of that was updated and retested our what we call our directory of services. So what that has done is enabled us to have a better interface directly with GPs in terms of some of the services that they can go on an alternative pathway. So, for example, where we have I'm thinking of an example, say a TIA clinic or a rapid access geriatric assessment, for example. So instead of some older person having to come through ED because GPs simply aren't aware of the operations and when it runs, etc., that the phone first has very much picked up that, being able to link in and have people go to an alternative pathway as well. So it's some of that. But you're right to ask, is it making an actual difference tangibly? That's still up for debate. There is a proposal to have it as a regional one line for Northern Ireland that had been discussed, etc. But it's proposed at regional level there will be an evaluation of phone first ahead of any further rollout of it. So we'll keep us posted and we'll see how we go. But we're certainly trying to work out if it's making an impact locally. And at this point in time, we're asking our staff on the ground, and our staff on the ground feel it is making an impact in terms of helping us with the flow. But in terms of outcomes and what that means from a patient experience, that's the bit we really need to get under still. So it's still early days.
Okay, thank you. Councillor O'Mara.
Yeah, thanks a million. Folks, some very good questions so far, and thanks for your replies to them. My question specifically based around the winter plan and the winter pressures that you're about to come under. They're well documented. They're in the news and they're on all the websites and that. There's a lot of anxiety out there in the public, and just working in a school, in a primary school as a teacher as well, it's something that we're very concerned about as well. Like we'll be doing everything we can, the same as every school, to stay open at all costs, to stay open. And you know, from September till the end of October, there hasn't been a week gone past that there haven't been half a dozen children off with COVID-19. And I suppose my question is just what effect is unvaccinated or are unvaccinated people presenting at our hospitals having on the planning for the winter pressures? So is it, you know, if we got to a stage where everybody was vaccinated, how would that impact upon the winter pressures? And just where are we now at the minute? How is it going to play out in terms of, you know, it's going to be bad enough that there's going to be a flu, there's going to be the seasonal flu, there's no doubt. It's going to be other respiratory illnesses and that. But just specifically with people who refuse to get vaccinated and how that impacts upon the pressures, how do we see that working out?
Thank you very much, Councillor. I think from my perspective, and I'll ask Aldrina to come in as well, based on what we have seen, there is no doubt that the sicker people in ICU and the sicker people in our wards have been unvaccinated. There is no doubt. And numerically, I mean, I don't have all the figures, but we've done spot checks and audits, and certainly you are talking about the high 80% of people who are in our bed with COVID are unvaccinated. Okay, so it's important to note that there is clear evidence that vaccination reduces the chance of people being hospitalized. And that is built in to the modeling that Aldrina talked about. But from my perspective, there is no doubt that the connection between vaccination and the severity of COVID. Now, we are still seeing very large numbers of people who are COVID positive. We know that the rate per 100,000 is still very high, although in terms of Newry and Worn and Down Council, it's one of the lower ones at the moment, but it is still very high. We are not seeing the same level of hospitalization as a result of that, and that is because people have been vaccinated. So you can see on both cases, the positive side is the numbers are not as high as they would have been previously, but we can also see from those who have been in hospital, there is no doubt that their people who are sickest in hospital have been unvaccinated. Now, I'll see if Aldrina wants to add in to that, but there is simply no doubt. Aldrina, from a winter perspective?
Yep, sorry, I was having some troubles there. The only thing I would add, I suppose, is equally important will be as we go through the remaining months is not just the vaccination program, but it will also be uptake of the booster program as well, because there are some people now in the community who will have been some time from their second vaccination. And as the months go on, that bit was much more difficult to predict and to work out in terms of what that might look like in terms of presentations to hospital. So that was just to add to that piece. The main uncertainty, I think, for us that is a key challenge, and it came in on Councillor Mulgrew's comments, for example, is in relation to normally when we plan, what we're planning for is the demand, and we have a reasonable expectation on our capacity to respond. But in this particular season, and with COVID in around us, there's a large number of challenges that we are trying to balance, and the uncertainty around of the impact on other areas and how we have to redeploy our staff in different ways, or deploy them rather in different ways, not least in relation to trying to maintain some surgeries, trying to redeploy staff across the piece. And then, as Councillor Mulgrew mentioned, you know, staff opting that are now 18 months into this pandemic, tired, weary, you know, we've got the best of staff with the greatest of will, but some people are just opting out, saying I've had enough and I'll just dip in and out whenever it suits me. And that is a capacity challenge. So when you do a plan, you're doing two things. You're working out what's your demand and then what's your capacity to respond. And I would nearly say now that our ability to predict our capacity through the period is as challenging as our ability to predict the demand.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Councillor McKevitt.
Yeah, thanks very much. And thanks, Shane and Drina, for coming and making the presentation this afternoon. And before I even open my mouth, I just want to commend each and every single worker that is there delivering and trying their best and in the times that we're in it. I just don't know how they're doing it, and that's the truth. Nobody could have predicted. I suppose, Shane, when we were meeting in the past, it was all about saving Daisy Hills, accident and emergency, and if one thing that I suppose the pandemic got, we got out of that, something maybe positive, was that people weren't coming for willy-nilly things, if you like, up to the emergency services and accident emergency, when maybe their doctor's appointment would have done, or even attending their pharmacist. So it has opened the door there. But when you open in your remarks, Shane, you talked about safety, quality, and you talked about people who work for us, and I'm assumed that was for the NHS. And I have to say, every single councillor that's been on this call have raised very, very valid points, that there's not a councillor sitting in our chamber, if there was only one to speak, that each of us could have related to a story or stories around it. And we are here to help, and we're not trying to cause any obstructions in any way for you or making things difficult. But I have to pick up this point, because a lot of my stuff that I was going to talk about has already been touched on, and I'll appreciate a follow-up meeting as well, what Pete and all has talked about, and Charlie and other councillors. But it's your staff. And I remember the days where we couldn't get people to come in and work in an emergency department, and we were nearly blamed for down in the area, if you like. And that has turned around with our Pathfinder group, etc. But we have, I'll go to nurses, and we recognise that there's a shortage of theatre nurses and that expertise, and that's causing bigger problems. But if you're looking to deliver on all of the things that you spoke about, your operational, your winter plan, working as a region, the planning of all the services and all, you can't do it without them, without our nurses, doctors and all of that, but you can't do it without them. And when you're paying nurses £12.50 an hour, and for they're working 12-hour shifts or 11-hour shifts to get that covered, and they're not getting their breaks, and they're not getting, and they're stressed out, and they're having to make awful choices about patient care and shortage of staff. It's really, really bad when somebody can walk in to Tesco's and not have that responsibility and get something similar in pay. I can't blame nurses. I thought it was an awful thing at the time in the middle of a pandemic when I was hearing and not looking into it properly that nurses were leaving and going into agency work. But when you look into it, when somebody's getting £12.50 an hour, whatever it may be, as a nurse, and then get up to £28 on the agency staff for the exact same job, the exact same shift, exact same patients in the bed, it's very, very hard to blame them, if you like, because they are wrecked and all of that. But I would like to know maybe how many nurses have left the NHS in the Southern Trust from the pandemic has taken over, how many have rejoined in the agency, and what cost is that to out of the budgets? Because I know that you have been getting extra COVID money and all the rest, and are you having to be able to pay that back using that money through agency work for the same type of care, if you like, for the patient? That's something that I would like answers to, because I think until we start, I'm delighted, Shane, you're doing the regional evaluation, if you like, or whatever it may be, plan for the five trusts on something on this about the money and the flexibility of the work. I'm glad that it's you that's doing that, because now we're able to maybe give you a call or have another meeting with you on something else, you know. But like, the services is there, but the nurses, from what I'm hearing and people are telling me, that instead of looking after four or five patients on a ward, they're now having to look after 8 to 10 patients on a ward, and that's not a service, do you know what I mean, for any nurse to have that pressure. So those questions, because until we get those answers, we're not able to start to help and to deal with other problems. So your waiting times, all of those things that can be affected and will be affected post-COVID, if we ever get rid of it as well, you know. But like, I personally have children at work within the NHS and at quite a number of levels, and you're not hearing many stories from them, but I'm certainly hearing them from people that work with them and you're on the ground doing it. It's really scary stuff. I don't know how you do it, I really don't, but it's worrying for me as an elected representative to know that your hemorrhaging staff, some aren't coming back, lots are coming back for a higher wage, and that this, and it's very, very hard to defend yourselves in that, you know, but we can't start dealing with that and trying to solve that problem unless we have the figures as well, do you know what I mean? So, and where it's taking us, and where you see it in the future planning, because this is something that's going back, you go back 20 years, Shane, and look at the cuts that's been made and different, our nurses' numbers being cut and all those things. I don't want to rehearse them, you know them better than anybody. But, you know, I don't want to go over. The only other thing that I would, in the I want to touch on your presentation. I probably missed something because my phone rang and I looked at it, but the 200 beds gap, is that a shortage?
Okay, yeah.
Is that a shortage, or is that something that you work, you know, if it's something you work on, don't even answer my question, but if it's a shortage,
okay.
That's very, very, very serious. And there was other points in it that have been touched on, but maybe we need to be rehashed as well. But the 200 bed shortage. So what is Daisy Hill? Sorry?
Sorry, I don't want to break over the top of you, but I'm just conscious we're going over the 2 hour slot for the trust. So
Sorry, rather than keeping everybody, I would like to know what capacity the Daisy Hill and the Southern Trust are working under. Is it 110%? Is it 120% over, or whatever it may be? We need to know that as well, because what Pete touched on, and I'll finish on this, is that we need to have the information so that when people are coming to us for help, or whatever, that we're able to rehash, just like what Barra sort of talked on as well about information on how many was vaccinated and all those things. If we have that information on the bullet points at hand, that we're able to say, this is what's happening and this is why.
Okay.
I'll leave it there.
Thank you. I mean, in terms of the, and I won't go over all the answers now, as I say, we have gone over the air, but what I would stress is that how many have left us is a number that we are tracking and therefore happy to push that across. You may have seen a newspaper article not too long ago, they looked at all five trusts. So we were the lowest of people leaving us, okay? But that is no position of grandeur, let's be honest. We still have people who are leaving us, okay? We're doing a lot about recruitment and retention, but you are correct. People are exhausted. They're on the floor. And what we have to now try and build a strategy, to a recruitment strategy that makes us attractive again. And I think we did a huge amount of work in the Newry area of Daisy Hill over the last couple of years to make Daisy Hill an attractive place. And we've been really successful at getting nurses, really successful at getting others. So we've got to redouble our efforts on recruitment. But actually, the more important thing is retention. We've got to make a trust strategy for HR, which is what we're looking at, that makes retention the number one thing. How do we create a work environment, create rotas, etc., that are usable? So if you have an issue of a nursing rota, you are correct. During the pandemic, we have had rotas where nurses have looked after 8 patients. And that is the absolute truth of it. And what you would rather have is a ratio of 1 to 3. You know, I mean, that's just the reality of it. So we've got to get out of the pandemic and we've got to start rebuilding our workforce. There is, I mean, it's the single biggest challenge on my desk. You know, it really is. We've got to rebuild our workforce. In terms of the capacity gap, that is a real capacity gap. So when we put everything together to make our system work well, we are 200 beds short across Northern Ireland the Trust, based on the examples that we have. Now, how does that show itself? It means as I speak at this moment in time, there are 40 people on a trolley in Craigavon and there are 13 people on a trolley in Daisy Hill waiting to get a bed. That's how it shows itself. So you can talk about hospital running at 110% bed capacity, but actually how it really shows it is the people who can't get in a bed. And that's what we're staring into at the moment. So we're short of beds, and a bed is just a bed. We're talking about the nurses, the doctors, and everything that goes around that bed. So how does it show itself? At the moment, as we speak, we've 53 decisions to admit, and those people are yet in a bed. And that's what we've got to try and change over the next couple of years, is get that capacity up closer to the 200, whatever that means, to give us a half chance of getting people through our hospital. And that is the genuine position we're in at the moment.
Owen, if I can just come back, sorry, one thing. You know, there's something that has already been touched on, and that was our waiting times. In any do you know, like there's 53 people sitting today, and I wonder how many of them had to sit for 13 or 14 hours before somebody got to make the decision. It's diabolical, isn't it, that people have to be put in that position?
Well, I can tell you exactly. In Daisy Hill, as I look at it, there are 8 people waiting on for a bed who've been there longer than 12 hours. So I can tell you exactly, because we watch this every minute of the day. And then we have a complete control room that's trying to manage these people through. So there's 24 people in Craigavon who have been there for more than 12 hours, and there's 8 people in Daisy Hill who've been there for longer than 12 hours. And they're waiting to get into a bed. And that's what we do. We manage that every single day with the resources we have to try to safely get them through our hospital.
And Shane, if the only thing I'd want to add to the end of that is, of course, while they're waiting for a bed, there's only 2 ways of creating a bed, and that is freeing one up as well. So it's equally then a resultant to the conversation we just had there previously around access to domiciliary care and all those other elements of the health and social care sector, and particularly social care sector, where it's also constrained and under significant pressure. And everybody forgets sometimes that when you have a pressure there, it automatically manifests itself in the hospital system as well.
Okay. Thanks very much to both of you. I just want to go back and clarify before we wrap the meeting up. Pete, just on your proposal for to meet with Shane, I just want to clarify if it's with the Southern Health Forum or with, because this is a full council meeting.
Yeah, no, it is the Southern Health Forum, because there's community reps there that would need to know that information around Daisy Hill as well. So, but if other councillors want to come in on it, yeah. But it's the Southern Health Forum, yeah.
Okay, so we could agree that Southern Health Forum, but all councillors are invited?
Yeah, if other councillors want to come in, we have no issue. I just think there's other community reps on the Southern Health Forum that would need questions as well. I think it would be important to have that. And it's easier to convene.
Okay. Una, can I make it Saltarina here again? Could I make a suggestion, just because I know there have been a few comments around a number of you have asked for the same thing, as if we had the stats, if we had the data, or a couple of bullet points or the key messages type thing. So if we undertook prior to any meeting to bring forward some sort of key messages, key bullet points, that might be helpful as a starter for 10, and then get a meeting to discuss those if people want to go through then the detail of that. Would that be helpful?
I would presume everybody would be in agreement with that. I just want to check the whole Democratic Services. During the meeting there, we went below our usual quorum. So it's just to make sure that that's okay, that it isn't actually a decision being made by the group here today, if that can be clarified.
I think the original proposal was made when we were court.
Okay, Sarah, thanks. Just wanted to double check that. Aldrina, I think any way you can, you know, sort of digest down the information chatted about today would be welcomed, if that's not too much trouble for you. Okay, I think that's everybody that had indicated that wanted to come in. So if we're content, we can wrap up today's meeting then. Just thanks to Aldrina and Shane for giving up their time. I know you're both extremely busy. And I'm sure I speak for everybody when I just thank you for your input and your feedback, and just being put on the spot like that. You were very, very informative. And as I said at the end of the Southern or the South East meeting, if you could relay back your thanks to your staff for all the hard work that they do, and I think I speak for all the councillors when I say that. You know, it just goes without saying, you know, they've worked through very, very, very tough times, and as we go into winter pressures, it's probably not going to ease up on them. So if you could relay our thanks to them, it would be appreciated.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will do so. Thank you.
Okay. So if we're content then, we'll wrap up and let you get on with your work then, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks everybody for joining us.